Welcome to the Visible Policing Podcast, where we explore the nature and impact of the visual in relation to contemporary crime and policing. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Mike Rowe from Northumbria University, and we're joined this week by Dr. Liz Aston of Edinburgh Napier University. Liz is also the Director of the Scottish Institute for Policing Research. Welcome, Liz.
Thanks very much, and thanks for the invite.
Ah, a pleasure. We want to talk to you this afternoon a little bit about your interests and experiences in terms of researching around visible policing. But, you know, just give us a very broad overview, if you like, at the beginning, of where that interest comes from. What kind of work have you been doing, Liz?
Yeah, absolutely. So it dates back quite a while, actually. My postdoc was a CIPER-funded postdoc on local policing in Scotland. And that was probably where my interest in this area was sparked. So essentially looking at different case study areas of Scotland before Police Scotland to see how local policing was being operationalised and various community policing models. After that, really through a European project called the Unity Project, which was on community policing across Europe, and also bits and pieces of research that have tied into that on stop and search in Scotland have all been involved in the interest in this area.
And so you've been looking at visibility in terms of what, police officer perceptions or public perceptions or both or what?
Yeah, so a range of things really. I guess visibility has come up as a key topic within community policing, within local policing. So it's been both looking at how officers see visibility. So more recent work looking with divisional commanders about how they structure local policing and how they try to see visibility in light of how local policing is operationalised, but also in a European context, more on what young minority groups expect from community policing and how they, whether they're happy to communicate with the police. And we find that face-to-face communication is quite important in that context, and accessibility as well as visibility.
So, okay, so when you're talking about visible policing in this context, are you really referring to officers on foot patrol? Is that the key here?
So for some projects, it has been about that. Through the research evaluation operational review group, which focused on stop and search in Scotland, we had a bunch of academics and operational police officers looking at stop and search, but also broadening it out to actually what are the police doing in their day-to-day work. And that was about thinking about, we have quite a bit of evidence on foot patrol and police visibility and its impact on hotspots policing, on whether it reduces crime or not, but what about its impact on public confidence, how the public perceives police activity? So in that sense, yes, it's about a visible physical presence, which is sometimes through foot patrol, sometimes through other activities. But in a community policing context in the European project Unity, we were interested in people's willingness to share information with the police, which included their willingness to share it online, for example, through apps. And that was where we found that actually people wanted to, in order to have trust and confidence in the police to be willing to share information in an online context, they needed to have some level of trust, which was often formed by relationships that are built up over time, often through face-to-face contact and interaction. So I guess there's an intersection between the physical and virtual spaces in that regard.
And also maybe, tell me if you disagree, but it sounds as though there may also be an overlap between the kind of trust and confidence agenda and the public legitimacy, but also some more operational issues like, you know, reporting and passing on information, gathering intelligence, things like that.
Absolutely. So certainly the relationships that people have or indeed don't have, and the impact of police practices, you know, can have an impact on people's willingness to share information with the police. And, you know, obviously within the literature on confidence and legitimacy, with the fundamentals of the idea that we're trying to police with consent, that's where we need to have cooperation and compliance as the intention, that essentially the criminal justice system will fall apart if we don't have people who are willing to come forward to report activity that's going on, either as victims or act as witnesses in court. And that's where the confidence and the legitimacy and the relationship between the police and the public are important. Not necessarily purely looking at it from a security and intelligence gathering mechanism, but also just in terms of the relationships that people have and their willingness to interact and engage with the police.
Did that vary very much across different neighbourhoods, or was this a really consistent demand, thinking about the Scottish work in particular?
Yeah, so with the Scottish work, you certainly find differences in different areas and different communities that are asking for different things. We also found when we interviewed divisional commanders that they talked very differently about how they would be operationalising local policing and visible policing. And they begin more recently when we did, myself and Yvonne Hale did work with divisional commanders in 2018, and we found that they're not just talking about visibility in a police presence, that they do talk a lot about numbers, so the numbers of people that will see their officers. But they're actually more enlightened in a way in talking about it being more important what the officers are doing. So are they engaging? Are they managing to engage with groups that they don't have good connections and relationships with? So that's seen to be important rather than just being seen for the sake of being seen, but it being about how they're engaging and building relationships with in areas where they don't have engagement, but they hope to have more engagement.
And that, but might that be at the expense of more generalised visibility?
Do you mean in the sense of generalised visibility across communities?
I suppose it's this fairly well worn area in some of the research evidence, but seems to suggest that, you know, the public that demand, if you like, a police visible presence in foot patrol terms are often the people who don't particularly need it in crime control terms. You know, the low crime, low antisocial behaviour neighbourhoods are the ones where people want to see the police on patrol. So there's that tension then, isn't there, between, as a divisional commander, there'd be a tension in, if that was true, there'd be a tension between, you know, where do you deploy officers? Do you go to the areas where there's high demand from the public, or do you go to areas where there are high crime problems?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the problem with going to the areas where there are high crime problems all the time is that you have sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy where more and more crimes come to your attention in those areas because you're spending all your time there. But I think what's interesting is that the commanders are talking about building relationships and engaging in probably the more hard to reach communities where they don't have that relationship and engagement, presumably with the purpose of knowing more about what's going on there. So I don't think it was necessarily about just being seen for the sake of it in all areas, but actually they did focus on the numbers and being seen, and they interestingly talked about, well, people won't see you because they're at work, they're not at home in some of these areas, but if we go to shopping centres, hundreds of people will see us. And when they were talking in that way, they weren't really that clear on what the purpose of the engagement necessarily was. You know, it wasn't really deterrence. Was it consultation? Was it simply just presence, numbers, being seen? But when they talked about the purpose of the presence, it was more about engaging with some of the communities that they didn't have that relationship with. And they also talked about the challenge of actually delivering foot patrol in the current climate, which I know is extremely relevant, particularly, you know, in England and Wales and in austerity with cuts. And they seemed to be viewing that in a way that it was possible to be visible in other spheres rather than just geographical place-based communities in order to do that. And that's where they began to talk about being visible online. And the idea of needing to move with the communication patterns of younger generations and using social media as a way of being visible.
Mm. Did you get a sense of how more you're talking to divisional commanders? I think were you talk any sense of how more junior officers kind of think, what their attitudes towards these issues were?
No, our work was really, we had a few kind of objectives of the study. It was more of a strategic level analysis. So we wanted to look at what models of local policing existed across Scotland, how local policing was structured and delivered, and, how visible policing was being operationalised from a commander's perspective. You know, next step of another project would be to look at that more in terms of how it's experienced and navigated and negotiated on the ground. And it'd be really interesting to look at how the physical geographic policing of places intersects with the online and social media. I know Liam Ralph's PhD focused on social media in Scotland and tells us a little bit about that side of it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You talk in the work about differences between an enforcement orientated and an engagement orientated approach towards visibility. Could you just expand on that a little bit, please? I think it's quite an important distinction in terms of the purpose of visible policing.
Yeah, absolutely. This really came from discussions that we had in REORG around stop and search and the fact that most of the literature was focusing on reducing crime rather than the public confidence angle. And we wanted to kind of broaden out the stop search agenda to really think about how stop and search exists within a broader framework of policing and what the police are actually doing on a day-to-day basis as stop and search, reduced dramatically in Scotland due to legislative changes. So we're interested, I suppose it ties in with, core debates around what the function of the police is. Is it enforcement? Is it crime reduction? In Scotland, the Police and Fire Reform Scotland Act has a slightly broader agenda where, yes, it's about reducing crime and it's about prevention, but it's also about improving well-being and safety of communities. So it's important in a Scottish context to have a slightly broader agenda there. And certainly in terms of enforcement and engagement methods, we did, a quick review of the literature on this, a small project funded by CIPER with Megan O'Neill and Yvonne Hale. And within that, we were interested in looking at a range of aspects of police visibility from foot patrol, police presence, directed police and patrol, and how those intersected with engagement, community policing, reassurance policing, enforcement, stop and search, identity check, zero tolerance policing. So we used a range of these key terms and looked at how they connected with confidence, satisfaction, legitimacy, trust, to see what we found there in relation to what the police were actually doing when they were out and about and being visible. Are they stopping and searching people or enforcing the law, or are they speaking to people, engaging, going to community events, trying to build relationships? Because there's various different things that the police will be doing when they're being visible. And that may have very different impacts on trust, legitimacy, confidence, rather than just focusing on crime reduction as the intention or the outcome.
Yes, I suppose visibility in and of itself isn't necessarily a good thing. It could be more about what the officers are actually doing. I mean, think about, public disorder situation. Well, seeing lots of police officers there isn't necessarily going to give the onlooker a great deal of reassurance or whatever if there's a riot going on.
Absolutely.
Rather different from sort of, drinking cups of tea with people in the shopping centre sort of thing.
Yeah, and I suppose we felt that the reason we did that, quick review was that we felt that the literature tends to focus on crime reduction as an outcome rather than trust and confidence. And obviously there's a raft of procedural justice literature which does focus very much on how the police are interacting. But I think there's a gap somewhere in the middle which isn't where we don't really look that much on what the police are doing when they're being visible. And obviously that'll be perceived in different ways by people depending on the background or what they think about the police anyway. But essentially we found in that review that, negative experiences with the police obviously impact much more on public perceptions of policing than positive experiences. We already know that from the literature. But we found that engagement methods were more associated with public confidence, as you would expect, than more enforcement-orientated ones. And obviously, repeated use of enforcement, as experienced by communities, will have a negative impact on public confidence.
So the point then about, and you've just said it, negative experiences having a greater impact on perceptions than positive experiences, does that suggest that there's more for officers to lose than gain if they put a foot wrong?
Well, I think that's where it comes into, you know, what they're doing with their time. So if the police need to kind of withdraw and all they're doing and the times they're only being visible are responding to issues or enforcing the law in a more responsive way, then there's much less opportunity for, yes, there's always the opportunity in the how you do it. So the procedural justice side, you know, giving people respect. And, you know, the argument in the procedural justice literature is that that's the most important thing. And essentially we're arguing in that there are aspects of distributive justice that are also important. So if you're repeatedly searched or you receive certain outcomes, you know, that in and of itself, no matter how nicely you're treated, is likely to have an impact. So it's not just how the interaction, how good the interaction is, how fair it is, how procedurally just it is, but also what the police are doing when they interact with you continually, whether it's chatting to you, whether they're just around and have the opportunity to build relationships, which are a possibility in a more community policing type model. Will be very different than if the police are just there reacting, responding, enforcing the law when required.
Yeah, I guess the distributive justice thing, I mean, yes, negative outcomes are not going to, you know, in terms of the outcome for the individual who's being stopped or being arrested or cautioned or whatever, you know, the outcome's not going to be great, but procedural justice probably means it could be not as bad as it might otherwise have been, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But what we found in the Unity Project research, which was with young minorities in 9 countries across Europe, was that assessments of, in certain jurisdictions, assessments of police effectiveness were also important, and that does actually come up as well in the procedural justice literature, more so in some contexts than others. So it's probably the case that in some countries you need to look at the social, political, historical context of policing in each country, or indeed even micro and meso areas within jurisdictions, to really understand, you know, the history and how the police are perceived, and that you need to have a certain level of effectiveness and lack of corruption, etc., before the procedural justice how bit matters as much, if you like.
And how did that, I mean, did you think the views of the, I mean, I don't know if you can compare or how easily you can compare the Scottish work with the work done in the Unity Project, but did the views of young minority groups seem to be distinct from the other views? That I don't think you focused particularly on minorities in Scotland, did you?
No, but we did do some of the Unity work in Scotland.
Oh, okay.
And we did find commonalities where actually the importance of face-to-face engagement and long-term relationship building came up. Although we were focusing on people's willingness to share information, we found that aspects of public confidence were very important in that, and we argue that it's more organizational justice rather than just procedural justice. So it's about interactional justice, distributive justice, and procedural justice that will feed into legitimacy and be aspects of public confidence, but that on top of that you've got accessibility, and that accessibility and availability will be more possible and facilitated through long-term face-to-face interactions, and that will help information sharing with the police. So that's probably where, not necessarily just visibility, but availability, accessibility, face-to-face, long-term relationships need to be there in order to be a conduit to information being shared, even in an online context, we argue.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it sounds as though, if just to take that one step further, then the idea that a social media presence can be a kind of virtual patrol, a virtual presence in communities, you would seem to be suggesting that might be overplayed a bit.
I think we need to look into that. I think there's a gap in the research. We're planning to do some work in this area where we're looking at legitimacy and increasingly kind of technologically mediated interactions, because yes, social media or indeed online reporting and contact might be great. It might work really well for some groups, and you know, different generations or different access needs that people might have, but actually, how willing are people going to be to share a lot of personal information? Another key barrier we found was around data protection and data security. So anonymity is difficult to achieve, but the more assurances that can be given around anonymity, the more likely people are to share information. But I think, yes, you're right, I think it might be overplayed. We need to look into it in a bit more detail to find... people did say that they were willing to share information, but only if they had trust and they didn't think that their details were going to be shared with, in some contexts, organised crime groups by the police.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So I guess it's to do with the kind of... that's part of the organisational justice piece, I suppose, is it? The way in which the information is stored and processed, and data protection and all of those issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there are key opportunities in kind of apps or information sharing platforms that might be made available. There may be possibilities to demonstrate various forms of justice, because what's discussed and what's responded to will be seen by many people. There's a lot to lose. But there's also potentially a lot to gain, because a lot of people will see that. So if the police can interact in a more procedurally just way in these fora, and indeed other aspects of organisational justice, for example, distributive justice could play out in a social media or a platform where information is being shared. If people can see that everyone has access to this and the police are responding to everyone's. So there are huge opportunities with technology and online communication, but the challenge, I suppose, for the police is, given the difficulties in policing physical spaces, also being not setting themselves up to fail and increasing expectations of online communication that can't be met.
Sure,
is a risk.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've certainly talked to officers about is that, you know, if they encourage online reporting, then they have to be very careful that they can kind of service all of that in terms of responding to the reports and doing something about information that's been gathered through various social media platforms and so on. In a way, it can just sort of make more and more demand on the police, and it's interesting, isn't it, because one of the findings from a while back, thinking about the work that Adam Crawford and Stuart Lister and other people did about the impact of increasing foot patrols on local communities, was exactly the problem that they were raising expectations that couldn't then be delivered. So there seems to be a parallel there with online and real world patrolling activities. You know, there's a risk of raising the expectations falsely.
Yeah, I mean, there's potential to demonstrate various forms of organisational justice, I think, in an online sphere when it comes to online reporting. But, you know, I think sometimes the police are going into that without having fully thought through the implications. It seems like a great idea, and it may be seen as a way of reducing cost, but we would argue through a range of pieces of work that a lot can be gained, despite the fact that negative interactions have more of an impact. A lot can be gained from building face-to-face relationships that may be missing in an automated online reporting context. And we might be riding on a wave of legitimacy that if we move more and more online, where does that leave us if there's only reactive, responsive, enforcement-based policing on the ground? What will happen to people's willingness to actually share information with the police? So there's a few of us working on potentially doing some research on this in the future. So watch this space.
That sounds excellent. And if people want to find out more about some of the work we've been talking about, Liz, where would they find that?
Sure. So the review of enforcement engagement methods is published on the CIPER website. That's a review of literature by Yvonne Hale, myself and Megan O'Neill. The Unity work, there's a Unity website which you can find, and we've some articles that will hopefully be published very soon, so we can share those if anyone gets in touch with me.
Thank you very much, Liz. I mean, it's really interesting. I think you've told us a lot about the sort of unpacking the idea of visible policing and what that means and how it can mean very different things in different contexts and how it interacts with real world policing. I think it's fascinating, and look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Great. Thanks very much, Mike.
Thanks for joining us, Liz. This podcast is produced as part of an Economic and Social Research Council funded study, Visible Policing. For more information, visit visiblepolicing.com.